Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 163 for September 20th, 2008, on location at Whiskey Live Paris. Why Paris? Ann Miller of Aberlour explains it best.
France is the biggest market in the world for single malt whiskies. You wouldn't believe it, but it's bigger than the States and it's bigger than the UK in terms of consumers and interest. And as we are about to see, as the doors open here at Whiskey Live Paris, they will come in and they know an awful lot about single malt whiskies, so they appreciate the product. But particularly for ours at Aberlour, we've got a long relationship with Pernod. They do a fantastic job distributing at Aberlour. It's their single malt whiskey, it's their baby, and so we make sure that we give them plenty of different versions of Aberlour, and they do a great job in return for Aberlour single malt whiskey.
What's the passion here in France for single malt? Why, in a country that's known for wine, why is there such a passion for whiskey?
It's quite associated with the fact that people enjoy wine and they know a lot about wine. So they understand where wine comes from, how it's put together, how the different flavors develop in wine. And so it's not too difficult for them to understand the idea of a single malt coming from a single distillery and how this authenticity contributes to the development of the flavors. And when it comes to Aberlour, of course, we can offer them a range of flavors from almost 100% bourbon cask almost to 100% sherry cask with the Abuna, and all the different nuances in between. And they enjoy what they get because it's quality and they can relate to that.
In fact, the French get two exclusive bottlings of Aberlour, a 14-year-old and an 18-year-old.
This was first available this time last year at Whiskey Live in Paris, and we did a formal launching later in the year. But this is a fantastic single malt whiskey because what we have done is actually put three different types of barrels together. So there's whiskey that's been matured in bourbon barrels, whiskey which has been matured in sherry casks, and so these have developed completely different sort of nuances within the Aberlour range. And then some of the whiskey has been put into what we call traditional barrels. This means these are barrels which we're filling for the second or third time. Now, over a long period, like 18 years, this allows the flavors to develop subtly, delicately. And so at the end of that time, minimum of 18 years maturation, the next task is to put these together in perfect harmony so that none of them is going to overwhelm any of the others. And I promise you, when you taste it, you won't be disappointed. This is a superb example of what 18 years of maturation can do for a single malt whiskey.
I am officially jealous now. The Aberlour 18 needs to be available worldwide, toot sweet. If you don't speak French, that means right away. Unfortunately, my French isn't good enough to interview some of the local whiskey distillers who make some very fine whiskeys indeed. John Metzger of Ubrac Distillery in France's Alsace region started distilling whiskeys 5 years ago after generations of distilling other spirits.
We produce spirits like Pierre, Mirabel, Quetch since 1874. The story about whiskey started 2003 because the neighbor is a brewery, and so we have the idea to produce our whiskey.
And tell me how it started from there.
The whiskey is making all in Alsace. So the first work is with a brewery who produce the malt, prepare the malt, and then after we distill the malt and put it in the barrels.
Yeah, what kind of whiskeys are you producing? Your single cask?
Only single malt and single cask, 70% and 30% like assemblage with different barrels.
And these are available only in France, I assume?
I don't understand.
Are sold only in Vendée, only on France?
Yes, because the production is very, very limited. We produce about 5,000 bottles in the year, and the market is also reserved for Alsacian people, about 70%, and a little bit for other country, at other village in Paris or south of France, and a little bit for export near from France, like Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, Luxembourg, and Denmark.
That's the case with many of the French whiskies on the market. They're worth tasting if you can find them, but finding them is the hard part. Jean Donnet is hoping to make his whiskey easy to find in the future. He's known for his Celtic Connection independent bottlings of Scotch whiskies, and is now about to release the first single malt from his Glenarmore distillery on the Breton coast.
Naturally, we make everything in the process. So we start with the raw malt, which we crush. We have it's a traditional distillery with two pot still, traditional pot still. I have chosen, after a lot of thinking, but with a lot of conviction, two stills which are each onion shaped. The stills are small. It's important because, as many people, I believe, the smaller the still, the better the whiskey, because you get more copper contact. One thing I'm very keen is to have a live flame rather than steam coils. So we have live flame. We have also warm tubs, and warm tubs are, well, are supposed, and I think they do, to deliver an oiler, richer spirit. We have wooden fermenters, because when you have wooden fermenters instead of stainless steel, they are more difficult to clean, but when you clean them well with steam or chemicals, they are well cleaned, but you still have a very small population of wild yeast, and those wild yeasts bring a small work in addition to your distiller's yeast and contribute to make a slightly more complex beer. And so you get more congeners at the beginning in the wash. And you must remember that the congeners are made during fermentation. What you do in distillation is you select them, you might alter them a little bit, but if they are not there, you will not get them. So we are, and last point, I distill very slowly. Average typical distillation time is 15 hours, which is very slow, especially for such small stills. And slow distillation brings two things. Naturally, you get more copper contacts. Most people are very much aware of this. But the second point is that you can see distillation also as a kind of selection. I don't know the word in English, tri. So you make a selection between various chemical compounds.
The cuts.
No, not the cuts. No, it's more than the cuts, not only the cuts. It's, okay. At the beginning, you want only the very volatile congeners, the very volatile molecules. Then you want you go continuously from very volatile molecules, you understand these molecules, to the heavier one. And if you do this slowly, the selection, you know, altogether will be much better, and especially at the cut, naturally. So these are all the points which make Glenarmore rather special distillery, and I think all the points I have mentioned before. I don't know of any other whiskey distillery, you know, which has all those specifications or all those points gathered under the same roof.
And this is really the culmination of a dream for you, because you've been wanting to do this for years, right?
Well, this is a dream I had. I remember that was a morning. That was in November '94. I was not working in the whiskey first. I was working in advertising, and I was ill. And the morning at 8 o'clock, you know, I had this crazy idea for some reason, you know, which went through my mind. I said, "God, I want to leave. I want to go to Brittany, and I will build a distillery." And I saw that because I was ill, you know, and maybe I'm still ill, but that, you know, it seemed to me a very seducing idea, but completely crazy. And, well, finally, you know, we've done it, you know.
And you've been bottling your own independent whiskies, your own independent bottlings of scotches, and you really sort of did a lot of work with the Sauternes casks and the Chateau du Cam casks and all that early on. But this is... sort of the ultimate step for you to really make your own whiskies, right?
Yes, sure. Making your own whiskies, if you're in the whiskey business, you know, there's nothing more challenging and more rewarding than making your own whiskey. And this was the idea right from the beginning, you know. So I started by bottling, brewing whiskey in Scotland, in Ireland, bottling it as such, or preparing double maturation whiskies with it, in maturing it with a Sauternes cask or a Van Pye du Jura cask. All this is very interesting, you know, and I keep doing this. But the idea behind this, you know, was to start a company, generate cash, you know the business, get customers, start to bring to build some legitimacity, but with the idea behind all this was to actually build a distillery. So it took more time than I anticipated, but I will not complain, because in the end we have it and it's working. So we are very happy.
Where do you go from here?
So next summer we will release the second expression of Glenarmont, which will be a peated expression. It will be marketed with a different name, so as to differentiate it clearly from Glenarmont. So it's still from Glenarmont Distillery, obviously, but with a completely different name and label. By the way, a very important point I like to stress: Glenarmont. Also, it may sound a little bit and maybe some idea of an evocation of Scottish Glen. It has nothing to do with Scottish Glen. You write it G-L-A-N-N, and Glenarmont in Britain means literally by the sea. So Glenarmont Distillery is distillery by the sea in Britain, and which is very fitting when you know the distillery. So that's an important point. I'm keen to stress it.
I did not get to taste Jean's single malt, but fellow malt maniac and Whiskey Magazine France editor Martin Nouet did.
It's a perfect drop out. He decided one day to change his life completely, and he came to Brittany, and he had a dream, and his dream was the distillery. And the first thing he thought of was to rebuild Port Charlotte Distillery in an island. That's why they call their daughter Charlotte. Charlotte is now 13 years old. And so, of course, that was an impossible dream. But since he established himself in Brittany as an independent bottler. So he bought casks and had them finish maturing on the side by the sea. And he was, he's very innovative, because maybe that's the marketing thing. I don't know, there are some good size in marketing sometimes. But he was the first to use a Sauternes cask, and the first cask he bought were from Chateau Yquem. And then after that, Glenmorangie followed and many others. But at this time, nobody would experiment wine cask, and he's so, in the way he does his finishes, he's very, very, very clever, and he's got a very good nose and taste. So, well, he has some, not everything works, but he does experiment, interesting experiment, but doesn't push the cork too far, as we say in France. He's very wise in what he does. And now the distillery now exists, has been distilling for 3 years and a few months, and they thought, well, okay, a three-year roll, it will be quite aggressive, it will be that and that, and not at all. It's lovely. It's got very fresh notes. There's this little touch, marine touch, and I thought, well, maybe it's in an effect of my imagination, because I know the place and it's by the sea. But another friend, Serge Valentin, has tasted it too, and without, we never exchanged our notes, and he said he got this little marine touch. For me, it's like wet sand. That reminded me of a Bruichladdich 10-year-old with this little, very subtle touch. But it's beautiful. It's really, I'm very glad. I'm very pleased, and very pleased for Jean.
Glenarmont will be available later this year in European and Asian markets, and eventually in North America. I'll have more on some of the local whiskies in the next episode, but there are other whiskies that need to be mentioned, including a whole table full of Edredowers and Signatories, with a smiling Andrew Symington holding forth.
New releases we have this time. We have a couple of new wine finishes. We have a Sassicaia finish here. We have a Muscatel. Under Balekin, our Peter Malt Vendor, we've got our third bottling, which is port matured. It is 100% matured in a port wood cask, and we have 100% port matured Edredour.
And what's coming out in the signatory lines?
Signatory lines, we've got 1963 North British Grain, 45 years old. It's the only whisky I've got that I can safely say is older than me at this moment in time. We've got some cask strengths in terms of, we've got Laphroaig 1990, we've got a Bowmore 72 coming out shortly. They will not be released until later in the year. There'll be a Glen Grant 1970, I think, 69-70. Yes, 1970 Capodonnick and Sherry Cask. Yeah, a few things.
Is it harder finding casks to source to produce new independent modelling?
At the moment it is, yes. There's not much on the market to buy at all. But we foresaw this situation a couple of years ago, and we bought very, very heavily at that time. So we have a rather large inventory stock of casks at this moment in time.
Do you foresee this problem lasting for the next several years, or is this a short-term issue?
Next 2 years, I would say, yeah. Whisky stocks in general are genuinely tight. It's not a question of just people not wanting to sell. It's because of all the market forecasts for countries like China, India, and so on, the growth in South America. The big guys have been caught a little bit short in stock, so they're basically holding on to everything, you know, waiting to see what happens. We'll start to ease as facilities like sort of Rose Isle open up and start to distill. Ailsa Craig, it's run by Grants, it's been up and running for a year now, so that will be, you know, it's a fairly large site, so spirit will become easier to obtain, I think, in about 3 years' time. Whether or not all the companies will want to sell it in 3 years' time, that's a different matter. I think there is a kind of move towards the fact that there possibly are too many independent bottlings on the market, and this is a good chance to kind of clean some of it up, you know. It's a chance to give the Shia, it's a chance to give the tree a shake and see what falls out.
Is this where it makes sense to have your own distillery like Edredour to give you something to fall back on in case the supply dries up?
That was our idea behind it, yes. We always wanted to have our own distillery. That was my ambition when we started the company. But I also realised if I wanted to have a long-term future in the industry, then yes, I would have to make my own spirit at some point. And Edredour fits perfect for us because of the size. You know, we hope to be utilising all of the spirit ourselves, so we don't need to sell to anybody else.
What new can we expect to see from Edredour in coming years?
Coming years, we're experimenting with all sorts of casks, filling casks from new, so it's 100% maturation. We've just bottled our first one, port. We've got Burgundy. We've got Château de Kiem, Sauterne. We've done some Edredour into bourbon that's never been done before. So yeah, there's a fair number of things, a few new finishes meantime until the 100% maturations sort of mature on a bit. You know. So yeah, there'll be a few things. We hope, as we're aging spirit on now, that we'll introduce a 12, 15, 18 year old in coming years. That's still 2 or 3 years away from, you know, happening, but it's getting there.
You're still having fun?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. We're just about to build 7 new maturation warehouses at the back of the site, so we'll basically store all our whisky on site. We currently only store about 700 casks on site. But
what are you most worried about with the whisky business these days?
Most worried about? To be honest, I don't have any worries personally. I'm quite comfortable in the position I'm in at this moment in time. We moved our bottling facility up to Edredour in October last year, so everything is on site now. And as I say, we're building 7 maturation warehouses, so everything will be stored on site. So it's a complete unit that operates itself. And we still get nearly 100,000 visitors a year, so we're hoping to attract more visitors, obviously, so having more activities on site for them to see. And we're getting a little bit more specialists, doing more private tastings, specialised tastings with specialist groups and so. And on one of these warehouses, there'll be an actual tasting come dining room type thing attached to the end of it, where you'll be able to look right into the actual warehouse, and we'll tend to do kind of whisky dinner things and that for those things as well.
As long as the government stays out of your way, you'll be fine.
Yes, that part of it won't be bonded, so it's fine, yeah.
Just a few notes from the news. Glenmorangie officially announced the sale of Glenmurray this past week. In fact, it was sold to a French company. La Martinique already produces the Glenturner single malt brand and the Label 5 blended scotch at its current facilities in Bathgate. Jim Beam broke ground on a new visitor center this week at its main distillery in Claremont, Kentucky. The project will take 3 years to complete and will handle 200,000 visitors a year. The distillery now gets about 80,000 visitors a year. It's Bourbon Festival Week in Kentucky, and the Kentucky Distillers Association has named 7 new members to the Bourbon Hall of Fame. This year's inductees include Beam Global CEO Tom Flacco and former Brown-Forman President Owsley Brown I, along with retired Old Fitzgerald Master Distiller Edwin Foote, Brad Waswell and Jimmy Wickham of Independent Stave Company, longtime Distillers Association staffer Rita Greenwell, and the late great legendary Evan Williams. I'll be in Lebanon, Kentucky next week for the Marion County Ham Days Festival. But before then, one more episode from Paris coming up. And finally, a quick look at the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. In addition to Bourbon Festival Week, it's also the first weekend of the Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival in Stockholm, Sweden. The second weekend of the Stockholm Festival is coming up next weekend, along with the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival in Dufton, the Whiskey by the Sea Festival in Vlissingen, the Netherlands, and the Brooklyn Bourbon Festival at Linnell's in New York City. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. That's all for this special episode of WhiskeyCast from Whiskey Live Paris. Special thanks to Whiskey Magazine France on La Maison de Whiskey for their hospitality, and as always, you'll find links, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening, and as they say in Paris, à bientôt.